This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this episode of In the Black. Before we get into the episode, I just want to sort of apologize for the quality of this episode. It's not up to our usual audio standard. We were just having a little bit of issues with the internet. The whole podcast is very clear. You can always understand what we're saying, and it's obviously very listenable, but you know, we like to set a high bar for ourselves. We set a high standard for our audio, so I want to apologize in advance just for not being up to our usual standard here, but still a great episode. So today's guest, we actually have the founders of NeuroGum. So quick story on these guys. We had no idea about any of this until I was listening on Joe Rogan about this gum that he was chewing. He's like, it's this nootropic gum. It's on the Dr. Rhonda Patrick episode that he had recently. He was going on about it. Hey, B vitamins, it's got L-theanine in it, it's got natural caffeine. And immediately it got my interest. And I was like, wow, I should, you know, find out more about this product. And so I found it on Instagram and liked a few photos or whatever. Next thing you know, in the inbox is a message from their PR company asking if we wanted to try some of the gum. So of course, naturally, yes, send us some gum. We tried it. It's an incredible product. We are not sponsored by them. There's no code or no ad or nothing here. We just genuinely love the product. It's awesome. I chew it when I'm going to do some work in the morning. So I'll have like my coffee and then I'll chew the gum, and I find it really levels my focus out. It quite kind of that laser-like focus that you need without any of the jitters. Or sometimes, you know, when you just you're just over-focused and like anything gets your attention, you almost feel a bit cracked out. This gum is amazing. It really focuses you. And obviously, B vitamins are great as well. Sometimes you don't get enough B vitamins in the day, and they're obviously super essential. So it's great chewing gum that has that stuff. And they've got the mints as well. So look, it's just a great product. It's definitely worth the plug. And today we spoke to the founders. They got a really interesting story. So you guys will hear all about that and get into it. And then, there's some pretty incredible stories in there as well. But if you guys want to check this company out, it is NeuroGum. Like I said, no kickbacks here, no paid sponsorships, nothing. Just great bunch of guys, great company, doing awesome things. And yeah, the company's absolutely kicking butt and taking off. Just before we jump into the show today, guys, if you have been sitting on the fence, if you've been wondering, what is my next move? You're in the fitness industry, you own a gym, or maybe you want to own a gym, or maybe you're a PT looking to grow. You have a passion for fitness, but you really lack the direction, you lack the tools and skills that you need to kind of level up. I mean, the fitness industry is a new industry. There are not a lot of established best practices. There's not the same career pathway that have been, you know, solidified for centuries as there is in science and law, accounting. What we need is structure. What we need as a fitness industry is stepping stones, is milestones, is systems to become great at what we do and continue to make the world a healthier place. MPE really supports that journey. So if you guys need some business coaching at any level, if you're a startup, if you think about opening a gym, if you're a well-established gym, if you're taking on problems at any level, you know, people that, you know, earn $1 million a year with their gym have you know, big problems, and life does not get easier. It just gets different to the person that's starting up the gym for the first time or taking on their first 5 clients in the park. So we really recommend at least having a call with MPE if you're interested in looking for some guidance. So you can find them at mpefitness.com. The team there is absolutely amazing. We've been with them for nearly 3 years now, and they've absolutely helped guide us and grow our gyms, and could not have done it without them. So guys, if you are looking for help, mpefitness.com. If you just go MPE Fitness in Google as well, you'll find them as well. That's mpefitness.com. And make sure you let them know that the podcast sent you. And guys, as well, you may have heard them last week. If you are interested in getting into the gym game, so maybe you're not in the gym game yet, or you want to get out of the gym game, maybe you've had a gym for a long time and it's time to sell, and maybe the COVID thing's got you a bit rattled, you want to do something else, you want to chase a different passion, and maybe you just want to know, how much is your business worth? Is it worth the amount of money you think it is? And you know, sometimes if you get a valuation on your business that surprises you, I mean, maybe you think your gym is worth $250,000, and hey, surprise, you know, maybe I can sell it for $500,000. I mean, that can completely change the way you think about your gym and your life and your future. The company we work with, we recently just sold off one of our locations, was AFS Brokers. So they're an Australian company that help Australian fitness businesses sell. And obviously, people that are looking to buy gyms as well can check them out. So if you guys are interested, you need to go to AFS Brokers. That's BROKERS.com. AFS Brokers. And they will help you out with the sale of a gym, evaluation of a gym, and they kind of take care of the whole process. I know there's a lot of confusion around this sort of stuff and selling businesses, and it was new to us as well. But we were simply able to just hand over everything that we wanted. Hey, this is the amount of money that we want. And they got it all done for us. So it's a pretty incredible service. And obviously, they're great people. Elliot's an amazing guy. He's trained at the gym before, so we trust him. We know him really well. And yeah, we had a great experience. And I have referred some friends that have also sold their gym recently successfully, just coming out of COVID. So, or coming out of lockdown, really. An absolutely great company you should check out. All right, guys, let's get into the episode with Kent and Ryan, the founders of NeuroGum. My Muscle Project, welcome back to another episode. Today, we have on some exciting guests. I'll let them give themselves a little bit of an introduction, but how we came across this was because, obviously, you guys know Raf and I love to eat all kinds of free stuff to see the effects. And, you know, quite often, there are a lot of supplements out there. I don't even know if you call this a supplement, they talk about, obviously, great marketing effects of how it's going to increase your focus and, you know, make you limitless, but this product, NeuroGum, NeuroMint's actually pretty incredible product, and there's no partnership or no paid affiliation here for anyone that's wondering. No, we just think it's a genuinely a great product, and we've been using it a lot. But I think what's more interesting is just, you know, you guys and the founders and your story and how you guys met. So look, I'll hand it over to you guys to kind of introduce yourselves and talk more a little bit your backgrounds and how you guys met, and then we'll go from there. So welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks for having us.
We're excited to be
from
here.
Across the world.
Yes.
It's awesome. Well, I'm Kent.
I'm Ryan.
And yeah, we're the co-founders of NeuroGum and NeuroMint. And you know, the catalyst for us starting this company really came, I think, similar to you guys. We were experimenters of many different things due to our backgrounds in science and athletics. And the culmination of those two fields just led us to want to create better products than what was out there.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're going back into like the history of our origin story. Like, I met Kent back in college in like 2007. We met in class. We were classmates, roommates, turned like best friends long before we like even came up with this idea for a business. But at the time, Kent was studying neuroscience, training with the Olympic judo team out in Japan. He was just like, always on the go. And then I was doing chemistry and economics. I come from a big cross-country and track background, and I was part of the team that went to state nationals in high school. And you know, in college, unfortunately, I got in a really bad snowboarding accident in 2009, so I was paralyzed from the waist down. I spent like the next 2 years in the hospital, about 15 surgeries from like basically 2009 to 2011. And that just solidified, I think, Kent and I's friendship. Just from the beginning, you really see not just your family come together and like wish you well, but you see your best friends come together and you know, come visit and give you the support that you need, especially in times where you feel like giving up and you don't know what to do. And I really looked to Kent to see how he was balancing everything. And essentially, version zero of NeuroGum came in these like kind of shady looking supplement pills.
Do I have some? Had new samples today. It looks like a bag of drugs. But we'd be traveling with it in our suitcases, going like across the border, and it's just
crazy.
Yeah, it was definitely sketchy.
I mean, yeah, like, I mean, what you guys are chewing now, or like you're having it in mints, it's like properly manufactured. But back in the day, it was just us kind of literally weighing out X milligrams of weight of
pressing pills ourselves.
Yeah, white powders and shit. Yeah.
Narcos.
Yeah, nice. And obviously, there's a lot to unpack there. I do want to touch on your snowboarding accident as well, Ryan. I know that for our listeners, we actually have never had anyone who's gone through something like this before. There's obviously had some pretty crazy injuries and surgeries and stuff, but nothing like this would be super interesting to get into. But Ken, firstly, I want to get into, I'm sure you've been asked before, how you ended up training with the Imperial Guards. I don't even know what that means. You have like a deep... a wide but also deep, you got your hands in a lot of different things. Neuroscience is obviously a huge thing that people dedicate their entire lives to, but they also don't train with the Olympic team and Imperial Guards. Again, no idea what that means. And they don't also start a business, and they also don't end up becoming like a crazy painter where you paint all through the night and do murals and stuff. So Which was the first love? Like, how did you decide to go in all these different directions?
Well, I think I've always been attracted to creativity and art just in general. You know, after college, I worked in like illustration, doing branding for, I don't know if you guys have a coffee bean and tea leaf out there, but like a big coffee brand here, doing their children's illustrations. And then I moved into music. So I was making music for film and television for a little bit. And, you know, business allows you to kind of combine all those things together, which I think it was a natural transition into a product like ours, which just supports doing whatever you want to do. But yeah, back to like the athletics part, I mean, I think similar to Ryan, you know, like my parents were working all the time. So karate and martial arts was my daycare. That's where I spent all my time. As I progressed in it, it's like business. You just start building a network. You start training with better and better people. In fact, two Australians, one just won the UFC championship, and I went to this fight, but Alexander Volkanovski and Robert Whittaker are training with my old training partners.
So, okay.
we have close ties to Australia as well. But I think through that network, training with some of the top colleges in Japan, we had the opportunity to really go into the Kodokan, which is the Imperial Palace in Japan, the Kokyu, which is the Imperial Palace in Japan, and train with them. And again, yeah, just it felt like a networking opportunity, but through the lens of martial arts more than anything.
Mm. And the Imperial Palace, I know it's like super sacred. It is separate from the government, right? But it sits above the government. Does the Imperial Palace have a say on what the government does, or not so much anymore?
Not well. After World War II, the emperor lost all of his power.
Right.
His power. Yeah. So he's just kind of a symbol.
Right. Yeah. So were you in there to teach them what to do, or they would like upskill their guards, or were you learning from them?
I would say the college teams in Japan and the Olympic team in Japan are infinitely better than the Imperial Guards themselves. But to them, it's like...
So they could just take over the country anytime they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, I gotta strengthen them up, right? Just
yeah.
In case.
Yeah. Okay, nice. And so have you continued to do martial arts to this day, or that type of martial arts, or have you moved into something else?
I think I went full force into art. I still continue to train and I work out every day. You know, my sister does all. She came from CrossFit, CrossFit background, and she's really into Olympic weightlifting. So she was training for nationals, and I think it's just like something in our family that really just dives into certain pursuits. And you know, as I get older, I get more grateful for being given that mentality by my parents. But now it's business and art. Like, those are the two things that seem to collide with each other in a positive way.
Yeah, nice. And were your parents, were they first generation? Did they come over from Japan and live in Australia? Okay. Well, so what was that like growing up? Obviously, the kind of culture clash, obviously Japanese culture, American culture, similar in some respects, but then obviously very different in many other respects. So what was that like? Growing up for you?
I think I'd be curious culturally how it is in Australia. You know, I grew up in a community originally that was primarily white. It's a place called Burbank. But at the same time, like living in LA, you don't really feel out of place as an Asian person.
It's kind of a melting pot here.
Because it's like so diverse.
Yeah.
There's definitely different pockets. But
I mean, I definitely got made fun of like growing up. And there's insecurities, obviously, in being Asian. And because we're just in American culture, we're just not ever cast in anything as Asians, especially not like the attractive male role. So it's a part of the bigger discourse right now in America. But yeah, I guess there's those insecurities growing up that probably pushed me further into extracurriculars than maybe certain things in school, let's say, like, I don't know, like going to parties or hang out with certain groups of people.
But yeah,
it seems to have worked out.
Yeah. It never seems to end well for like the guy who peaked in high school, right? Captain of the football team. Like, yeah, if he didn't get that sports contract, it's not going well for him now. No offense to anyone listening to that. That
was outstanding at high school.
Yeah,
that scored 5 touchdowns in his high school game.
Yeah.
Talks about it, right?
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And just to finish off with the sort of artistic painting stuff, I did a lot of art as well. What was was there some point where you decided, okay, this is going to be my dream? I'm going to like become a famous mural artist or whatever? Or did that die pretty fast once you opened Eurogum?
You balanced both pretty well.
Yeah, I think it's all so comprehensive. The, you know, with art or music or anything creative, there's that mindset of exploration that I think ties in perfectly with business just naturally, in the same way like athletics or anything else does as well. And if you're able to balance and utilize it without letting them conflict with each other, then I think it enhances just every aspect of your life. So that's the way I see it. I mean, I think in the last 2 weekends, because of the riots and everything, me and my group of muralist friends, we painted like 13 murals over the last year. Like, we still continue to paint. You know, it was a cool project.
There was protests all around the city in LA, all around the country, all around the world, actually. But a lot of the businesses here in like Little Tokyo had like all their businesses boarded up. Just like plywood. It was like depressing to see. And you guys came up with a really awesome solution.
Yeah, we just painted all the plywood instead for free, like just murals on them, so that no one tags or breaks into them. That's a small part of it. And the rioting is overblown for sure by the media. But it was primarily more to provide support in the way that we can from the art side. And then on the other end of it, being able to provide support through our business as well, and using our business as a platform to support just empathy as a whole. Have people just love each other instead of be so divisive.
For the neuroscience part of things, that's obviously kind of the hardest right turn from all this stuff. What attracted you to that, studying that specifically?
Well, I was going to go initially into psychology. Well, I started off as a philosophy major, and then I moved into psychology, and then I ultimately went into neuroscience. But that was I think you guys know as athletes as well, but understanding the physiology and the anatomy of something exponentially makes it easier to understand the function that comes with it. So I think it was just like a natural transition into realizing how much psychology is based around the anatomy of the brain and the central nervous system as a whole, and wanting to explore that more. So, you know, I could utilize it in the best way possible.
Yeah, sounds like a perfect fit for what you're doing now. Ryan, tell us a little bit about before the accident, like the stuff you were doing athletically, and obviously your studies as well, quite interesting, quite different. Economics and chemistry, I think it was two very different worlds. Yeah,
very different. I guess like similar story, like my parents are, I'm ethnically Chinese, but both my parents were born and raised in Japan, so they moved out here in their 20s. So me and my sister were born out here in LA. But same thing, like grew up in a pretty Asian household in terms of like discipline and upbringing culturally. So my mom put me in kendo, which is like a Japanese martial art. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but it's kind of derived from like the movements of the samurai, and it's basically like Japanese fencing. Like to wrap it up in a nutshell.
Way more to ruin it.
Really quick, and instead of like a linear pattern like most fencing, you're in a grid, like in a square, and so there's a lot more movement involved. But my mom was like super adamant about me joining that when I was 5, and with a lot of pushback. I didn't want to do it because, like, you know, growing up, it's like, I want to do the cool sports that everybody else is doing, not, you know, smaller, obscure sport. And, my mom was so adamant. She took me, like, to practice, like, 4 times a week, you know, in, like, from 5 till I was about 11 or 12, I moved to Japan. And then I really saw, like, in Japan, it's, like, a nationally recognized sport. And I saw how like fired up. People were there, and my mom put me in like the best gym there, and that's really kind of where I excelled. So I got black belt when I was like 13, and we were at Jujokan Dojo, which was like one of the top, and I got to compete like in the middle school, high school level, like national equivalent in Japan, and that was kind of like, you know, most of my childhood, I guess, like in terms of athletics. And then when I moved back from Japan to America, I kind of dived into cross country and track, and that was a huge experience and kind of a turning point in my life, where you know, we had arguably the best high school coach in the U.S. I think we won 3 national titles, like the number one high school in cross country, which is I think the most participated sport, because basically anybody can run, you just go on a jersey and just run, you know, 5 kilometers. But yeah, we went to state nationals. Junior and senior year, we were 7th, and then like the year after we graduated, they won national. It was really cool to see that progression. And you know, I got I had a couple offers to go to different schools to run, and I decided that I really wanted to focus on school and just like having more of a normal life. I'm like, kept going in that trajectory with martial arts. But yeah, when I was 19, I got into a really bad snowboarding accident, and it was something that I was super passionate about. It was the one thing in winter I really looked forward to, and something that, you know, I could have never expected. And it was just kind of a freak accident of going off a jump and about 35 feet landed on my back, and so shattered my spine and instantly paralyzed. And yeah, for the better part of about 2 months, I was in like the ICU and then rehab for about 5 months intensively. And then came back to school like that fall. So I got injured February 2009, went back to school September 2009. And kind of all along the way, you know, my friends would come and visit. And it was a sense of a lot of like denial at first, and a lot of, I guess, yeah, denial and accepting like what really, really happened. And I think my friends and family were the ones who really understood what the diagnosis of this, how severe this injury really was. And I kept thinking I was going to like walk out of the hospital and things were going to be back to normal. And as the months went on and as the days went on, kind of sunk in the reality of it. And, you know, it took me to be honest, like, you know, a few years to kind of like get back into the groove of like, no, my life is still what I make of it. It's my perception. And I've always wanted to run a marathon. I might not be able to run a marathon, but I could race it, hand cycling and doing wheelchair racing. And that kind of allowed me to tap back into like my life in endurance sports. And I got to do a couple marathons, or 7 marathons. I got to train with the U.S. Paralympic team, and kind of used Kent to give me like advice on how to balance training and supplementation. And
you're just a guinea pig.
And I was just a guinea pig. Pretty much.
Yeah.
It was kind of a long uphill battle for a while. And then, long before we kind of came up with the idea for his business. But I think first and foremost, it was always about, you know, how do we make the most of what we have? And ultimately, you know, we were friends first long before we started this business, and we relied on each other and finding out what worked and knowing what worked for our bodies. And yeah, that was kind of version zero of NeuroGum long before we launched the gummy mints.
Yeah, that's cool.
So is that a whole marathon pushing the wheels? Is this like, because we watched that documentary where the guy goes across the country. I'm like visualizing that.
Oh, yeah.
Is that like, is this the same shit?
Yeah. It's like a push chair. So there's two types. It's wheelchair racing, which is basically this trike with like cambered wheels, two in the back and then one in the front.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's in the Olympics, right?
Yeah, there's Olympics. And then hand cycling is just a lot faster. There's like gears, so it's a lot easier. But wheelchair racing, there's no gears. You're literally wearing these like gloves, and you're punching this inner rim within the wheel, and you're making, you're basically punching with momentum. But I mean, you can get up like 50 miles an hour on downhills.
Right,
okay. Not braking. Yeah,
dude, tell them the story of when we biked Carmel. When you were hitting that downhill.
Oh yeah, that was on hands. Yeah, we were doing this.
Crazy.
This was 2013, and then did this charity bike ride called Best Buddies. It was like 100 kilometer, like 63 mile bike ride along PCH. So it's like, it's just along the coast on the California coast. It's a windy, super up and down. It's pretty brutal. Because 63 miles, if it's straight, it's pretty good. But this one is like, tough.
Like,
and it was like the last like 5 miles, and it was all downhill. And this is PCH. It's actually a really famous road. It's a one way road per side. And I was going down, I don't know, maybe like 45, 50, and
miles per hour.
I was going like a turn miles per hour. Jesus. So.
It's like 70 kilometers or something, yeah. Oh my god.
And then we're going down on this turn, and this car was coming back up on the other side because our side was blocked off for the charity ride. And I think he was coming a little bit close, and then I bent back, and I slammed into like the metal divider at like.
You would have fallen off a cliff.
I would have fallen off a cliff if there wasn't that metal divider, but I shattered my leg and.
Yeah, you were like, I'm fine. I'm like, oh, it's cool. And I'm like,
just finish.
Yeah, freaking boat's like dangling.
one of the metal spokes like snapped, and it like almost cut off my toe, and it was. I got rushed to the emergency. Like
the Eagles gave us a shout out.
Yeah. those things are fast in a nutshell. if you see them, there's the center of gravity so low, so you can pick up speed real quick on the downhills.
Hmm.
Yeah,
right. Tank. Yeah, that's crazy. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from your injury and how you got through it. You guys knew each other before the accident, yeah?
Yeah.
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 Okay, so how did you... Yeah, how did you find your relationship change during that process? Obviously, it's not an easy thing to watch your friend go through. And, you know, it's not like some of the things that you could have done before you now can't do. But then obviously there's a whole new world of things. And how did you kind of approach it? Because, you know, I'd imagine if it happened to Raf, it'd be a hard... It's like, where do you start? How do you have that conversation? And, you know, how do you get each other through it? How did that go?
It's interesting because, you know, at first it felt like it was going to be okay after a while. Like, it's like, okay, Ryan just got into this situation, but after like, you know, maybe a few months or a year or something, like he'll be fine and he's going to be back on his feet. And then I think the realization of that not happening began hitting. It's like when something extremely traumatic happens, I think, obviously much more traumatic to Ryan than the people around him, but like you don't know how to react to it. So initially, you know, I feel like we try to incorporate into things and then, you know, make it feel like nothing happened and feel like it was okay. But then as we get closer and closer and like, you know, it seems like nothing's really changed in that regard. Like I think you just change that mentality back to like, okay, well, it's like there's whatever physical limitation for this thing, but you just, it's just like a, not necessarily a hurdle, but just like a restriction that you don't even think about anymore. So like the friendship just keeps going. In the same way, like I'm trying to think of like a comparable. Like if you're driving a car, like obviously you're not going to be able to, you're not going to try to like, if you're driving like a Honda Civic, let's say, you're not going to go off-roading with it, you know, but you can still go off-roading in a different capacity with maybe a different car or like thinking about it in a different way. And you just get used to just like looking at an obstacle that may not be possible in a wheelchair, but finding other ways, just like, okay, we're still going to do it just in a different capacity. And then in that form, nothing changes. The friendship, the adventures, the excitement that we had together is still exactly the same.
Yeah.
So that was for me, like after the transition period.
Yeah. I think like in the beginning, I think it's like almost like I'm in more denial. And then at the same time, like I didn't want everybody else around me to make this a bigger deal than it was. And like, you know, address it awkwardly or whatever. And I think it was like a slow transition of like, oh, okay, well, like what do we do in this situation or what do we do in this situation? And I think navigating it in different ways. So like if there's, you know, if there's stairs, like let's, okay, instead of like, we can wheelbarrow up. So like I'll climb with my arms, just grab my legs or, you know, like
the piggyback or whatever.
Or like if it's scuba diving, realizing, wait, like scuba diving is the best thing for spinal cord injury, because like we're buoyant and we're floating and you don't really aren't aggressively swimming, or if we're bike riding, I can hand cycle. Like we're trying to figure out different ways where it's doing the same thing but doing it differently. And I think that's just forced me to be more creative in a lot of ways.
Once you start figuring out all those things, then like it was just like, okay, hey Ryan, we're doing this thing. And usually I don't think like a standard person in a wheelchair would even want to do, but Ryan will never let that stop him. And because of that mentality that Ryan has, he's like, okay, yeah, let's go scuba diving. Let's go do this. It's like, because of that mentality, I think all of us just naturally were like, okay, well,
yeah,
like we're going to just stop thinking about it. I don't know. It's,
yeah.
And I was like stubborn about it enough to be like, I'm going to figure it out. And I think my parents probably worried the most about it. And I think that was probably the most difficult part about coping with the situation. And I think over the years, like it's been over like 10 years for me. But seeing them, you know, my dad was, for example, like growing up, my dad was really strict. He was like very focused on school and, you know, athletics. And after my injury, my dad actually assumed that I wouldn't go back to school. He was like, oh, you know, it's okay, you don't have to graduate college, all this stuff. And it went from like this strong like tiger dad to like now like my son's so fragile, like I don't want anything else to break him. And it was crazy to see that transition. I was like, no, like, are you kidding? The last place I want to do is stay at home or at a hospital. Like I want to move on with my life. Mm-hmm. But that took some time. And then, you know, graduate, you know, then I'm like unemployed for a bit, find a job, and then I end up at like one of the killer startup called Hulu. It's like a streaming internet.
Yeah, we know it. Yeah.
And you know, and then like little milestones, you know, like that allowed me to gain more confidence, I think, in the world. Mm. And then that basically was the segue into NeuroGums. When we were getting scuba certified, we were trying to cram certification like 4 days. We're super tired. Usually we had these like energy pills that Kent was making, like I was saying, like Virgin Zero back in the day when we were still training. That was like kind of the peak when I was training with it. Like with hand cycling race chairs. And we realized that there had to be a more convenient way to take supplements and pills that, you know, that wasn't stigmatized and something that was more accessible, more shareable. And, you know, at the end of the day, like we want to share experiences. We want to do these things together. How can we make this like something that we're taking anyway more accessible? And yeah, it was a scuba diving trip back in 2013 when we really came up with the idea for NeuroGum.
Nice.
I guess like
shared experiences.
Yeah, shared experiences. I guess looking back on it's crazy because, you know, I do like I wake up every day and I know that I'm in a chair, but then I don't think about all the things I can't do anymore. I think about, you know, like what do we have to do today? Like where are we traveling to? Or, you know, what's this day or what this meeting is like? And my perspective on life has changed a lot for the better.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is there anyone in particular that is sort of inspired you to kind of overcome the first hurdles? I imagine, you know, in the beginning it was harder than it is now. Obviously now you've, you know, figured out how you're going to live your life, and you've, like you said, had the little milestones and wins and all that sort of stuff. So was there like a particular, like I don't know, did you watch like a Michael Jordan motivation video or something, or was there a book that you read, or was there like a story you heard or a TED talk or something like that kind of really helped you that you can point to?
I think, yeah, like spinal cord injury is a relatively rare accident to happen. And I think I looked toward other people who had gone through it and found like triumph through tragedy. And it was like, you know, the Christopher Reeves of the world, where he was, you know, in a really bad spinal cord injury and needed a ventilator. And yet he was able to create, you know, one of the biggest movements in research communities to find a cure for spinal cord injury and any other like neurological ailments. And Jesse Bilar is another huge example. He was a professional surfer at like the age of like 14 or 15, and then he broke his neck and then started an organization called Life Rolls On, where he helps like other people get back into surfing and skating. So I kind of looked toward other people who've done it before, and I was like, if they can do it, like I can do it. Mm-hmm. Like, and it was like a gradual thing. And then you fall back into this, you know, talk about like mental health, but you fall into this deep, dark point in your life where like, no, I actually can't, like, I'm not able to beat this and get through it mentally. And you know, just like honestly day by day, and then looking at other people who are
Like Kyle and Jake.
There's other people who definitely. Looking at other people with similar injuries that, you know, ended up succeeding in life and finding joy in other things and other aspects.
Like, you mean other people you met in the hospital?
Other people I met in the hospital, or you know, I was back in school and I met my buddy Jake. We lived were roommates for a year, and he was a similar injury to me. He got injured in high school, like almost a year before my accident. But he was so much further along in terms of like adapting. And he was like traveling, and at the time, like I wasn't traveling. I was like still going through some surgeries. I was like, if you can travel around the world, and you know, he's, you know, go out and about, you know, finding jobs and stuff. I was like, I can do that too. And yeah, it was just like little bits of confidence day by day. And I just surrounded myself with people who were pushing me forward, not like pulling me back.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome. And I know that you guys obviously put a lot of time and energy into Neuro now, but do you ever ever spending time looking at the new research that comes out with, you know, different surgeries or different procedures and stuff? Like, really the only thing I'd heard about it recently, and I'm not doing any research, but the only thing that sort of entered my stratosphere, I guess, was when Elon Musk talked about the Neuralink, and he was like, yeah, we're going to like put fucking chips into people's heads that have spinal cord injuries and like restore limb movement. And I was like, I don't know if this is just like an Elon Musk statement or if this has any like legitimacy behind it, but like that stuff like that is pretty awesome as well. Like, how much time and attention are you putting towards, you know, this sort of stuff?
I mean, I used to be obsessed with all the research between like stem cell research that can help regrow like spinal cord cells to, like you're saying, MITVR and computers that can help bypass like a bridge in this damaged part of the spinal cord. But I think nowadays I'm just like hearing these kind of major updates like you, but I recently got reconnected, or I got connected to somebody from the Miami Project, which is like one of the largest spinal cord injury research places. And they're doing some really cool stuff with computers where they're implanting a chip. And based on your brain waves of you thinking of moving your hand, there's a robot, like someone who's like paralyzed from the neck down and can't move their hands. Like the robot is able to compute zeros and ones based on brain waves of you thinking of moving your hand. And it'll like start to like gain traction of like, okay, this is the pattern. And then start to move the robotic hand. And it's,
well,
I mean, it sounds like science fiction, but it's happening. There's research on it. I can send it to you, but it's really cool. And that's probably honestly the most promising part. And, while I'm confident that there's going to be like a cure of some sort with like whether it's like a Neuralink or stem cells, like I know it's going to come, and I'm just going to live my life to the fullest until the day comes. So
yeah,
you're going to be a cyborg.
I want to be a cyborg. Yeah. I'll be like RoboCop.
Yeah, sick. Yeah, cool. And then obviously I wanted to get into Neuro and stuff, and I think one of the interesting things that you guys can speak about with Raf. So Raf, if you guys don't, we didn't get into this, but actually he started a similar sort of product where he was mixing like a regular everyday sort of snack, I guess, and he started mixing in supplements, sports supplements, and nootropic stuff. And so he started this company, Pig Chocolate. It's like a dark chocolate.
Ooh. Oh, what?
Yeah,
I love the branding. It's really dark.
Yeah. Yeah, so this one's focused. So it's dark chocolate with lion's mane mushroom, green tea, ginkgo biloba, natural caffeine, and you know he went on Shark Tank as well. He had he had a very interesting experience. They got
I went on obviously the Aussie version, Great White Shark Tank.
Oh, is it called Shark Tank down there?
Yeah, it is. We have a lot of sharks, so we wouldn't not call it Shark Tank.
Yeah.
It's called Dragon's Den in some other places in other countries.
In the UK, yeah.
Our Shark Tank episode's re-airing tomorrow.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, right. So tell us about your Shark Tank experience, and then Raf can share his experience with you guys.
Dude, yeah, we'd love to hear your experience.
Mine was similar to how your snowboarding trip went.
Not well.
Really bad.
No.
Yeah. I watched him... I watched him prepare for it for months and months and months. Like, honestly, he became just a machine. And then next day, how did it go? I don't want to talk about it.
It's pretty brutal. I mean,
yeah.
It was nerve-wracking, for sure.
I was for sure probably – it was the most nervous I've ever been in my life, whether it was a sports competition, any pitch meeting, by far. Because I think the way I think about it is like, okay, if it's a normal pitch meeting with an investor, it's a closed room, whatever happens, if I stutter or if there's like some
– Put your foot in your mouth.
And yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, there's, you know, four people in that room, and we can call it a day. But I was like – if we choke or if we, any stutter or weird facial expression that we make, I'm like, they're going to use that and like millions of people are going to see it. So that was the nerve-wracking part. And I would kind of like psych myself out. And,
We
had a preparation
for it. We prepared a lot. It was nice though because we got chosen at the very, very end, but the producers liked us so much that they pushed us to the very front of the line.
Awesome.
So we ended up being the first company that was pitching in front of the judges for the new season. So
we didn't have to wait around and have that anxiety because we knew we were in the first company on the first day. And so we didn't have, I guess, in a weird sense, we didn't have to wait around with all that anxiety and like see all these other companies go first. We're just like one and done, first and done. We're
I do remember standing outside before they opened the door and let you in though. And they're like, guys, you're going to go on in 5 minutes. Like, get ready, okay? And then they did. Calls back to like 45 minutes and we're just standing there just like, fucking god.
It was kind of like this call before where we're gonna get it on the squad Skype or like Zoom. It was like there's so many technical difficulties that they had because it was like their first day back for everybody, the crew, the video crew, the sound, and we were like, all right, 5 minutes. And it was like 45 minutes later we're just like standing there in front of the door.
They also like didn't match Ryan's skin tone correctly for his makeup.
Oh my god.
So he like looked like a vampire.
That's on purpose.
Tan's got like matched perfectly. Yeah. He looks like super tan. The best he's ever looked. Like it was like perfect skin, and then they made me look like literally a character from Twilight.
Robert Pattinson, yeah.
My lips were blue and purple, dude. They like got my lip color wrong and they made my skin like pasty white.
But yeah, we went in. The crazy thing is, though, we went in, we're super nervous, we give the pitch, you know, the sharks are right in front of us, but the way it's set up is all the cameras and the producers and the assistants are hitting it, like, in the background. So it really, after, like, the first 5 minutes, it just felt like us and the five sharks just six sharks talking to each other.
We were actually there for an hour 40 minutes and then it gets cut, the episode gets cut down to like 7 minutes, but honestly it's like a time warp. Like we came out of there and our two producers like, how did it, don't save everything for the exit interview, and then we're like, how did it go? I was like kind of like, you know, like almost blacked out, and you're like, you were there for an hour 40 minutes.
That's,
and we're
crazy.
Like, what the fuck? Like it felt like 30-40 talks.
Yeah,
but your perception of time just goes away. And yeah, it was pretty nerve-wracking. Yeah, that was back in September.
Wow, that's so long ago.
How was the outcome? Obviously we haven't seen the show. I don't know if we're spoiling anything here, but yeah, obviously, well, tell us why you went into it. Like, obviously there's the obvious stuff, publicity and that sort of thing, but then there's heaps of businesses that could go on it that have chosen not to, so obviously you had to have a really strong reason to go on it. And then yeah, how did it affect the business afterwards, and what did the sharks say, and what's happened since?
I mean, if you get a good deal with the Sharks, if we were to get a good deal with the Sharks, we would have totally jumped in. But, I mean, they're Sharks. You know, they cut our valuation in half. They're trying to, like, lowball us. And we couldn't... It was tough. Like, we wanted to make it work, but we couldn't. And, obviously, the publicity was fantastic. And our company's excelled since then with Rogan and, like, I mean, everything else. But
retail channels,
different opportunities. But at the end of the day, it's we have to keep our integrity.
Mm. Yeah, ultimately we came down with like, okay, what's the absolute like lowest valuation we can hit? And we're like, okay, if it's a dollar less than that, we'll walk away. It was just like we had a firm number in mind, and we were pretty like we weren't pretty close. But if we hit that, we would have been down to take one of the offers that we got offered by Robert.
And Robert offered us $1 million at a valuation that was half of what we had,
but
unfortunately.
But honestly, the experience was awesome. Mm. It was nerve-wracking, but looking back on it.
We also had a shout-out from, do you know Apollo Ono by chance?
No.
He's no.
Like an Olympic skater, but he's the most decorated Winter Olympian, U.S. Winter Olympian.
but he's an investor in our company as well as a friend, and he gave us a shout out on Shark Tank. And for some reason, they just didn't air it.
We spent like 3 months with his legal lawyers, their lawyers, to clear all the rights and the likeness. Because Apollo's like, he's an 8-time Olympic medalist. He's like the most decorated U.S. one Olympian. And we got all the rights, and we're like, yes, this is going to air. It's going to add so much credibility. And it didn't air. And we're like,
fuck.
Like, we went through so much.
But damn.
We were pretty sad. Oh, I mean, but 7 minutes.
We should send them the clip of you guys have an Australian ice speed skater. That.
Oh, the guy that fell. Everyone fell and he crossed the line. Yeah, what's his name?
I don't know, but he's like our only ever ice skate gold medalist.
Should have won gold on that event.
Oh, really?
Right.
Yeah, the whole crew got like wiped out.
Yeah, everyone that's Australian has seen that like 1,000 times.
Yeah, it's like, all right, Australia, like generally you suck, but every now and then we hang in for a complete miracle and then you'll win a gold medal.
I think it's like our only ever gold in that sport. It's like...
It's about being lucky, not working.
Oh my god!
Man. Right place, so right time.
He seemed like such a great guy.
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
yeah.
I think he was as surprised as everybody else.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. So
Rob, tell us about your experience.
I will say most of what you said is it's very similar. I think they copied a lot. They did exactly the same thing, where it's like, hey, you're going to be on right now, and then they come back an hour later. So close, going to be so soon. Just be ready. 1 hour later. Okay, it's actually not for another hour. But I'll tell you one thing that was different was, so we did our whole thing and obviously it didn't go well. They smashed us and then we came back out and like, we were going to go back away. And then they're like, we want to get another shot of the pitch. So can you guys come back out and just do it again and pretend you haven't been out? And I was like, no, like we're done. Like, it's they're like, no, you have to. So I'm like, okay.
That's so awkward.
So awkward. So we have to go back out. The sharks have gone and like pretend that we haven't actually seen them before again and start it all again. So I go out to start and they're like, stop. They're like, can you smile a lot more and look like, you know, you're looking forward to it?
After you've been roasted.
I'm like, no, I'm crushed. I'm like, oh, come on, you got to make the best of it. So anyway, that was like a thing. So it was exactly the same as you guys out there. Not as long as you, like an hour. But then, yeah, after it, we had to go through this charade. And then they took us directly from there to the psychologist where we spent like 30, 40 minutes with the psychologist.
Yeah,
there's a mandatory psychologist and you like have to sign a form saying that like you're not going to sue us
for
emotional damage this may have caused you or whatever, right?
Fuck, it's crazy.
Yeah, I forgot about psychologist. Yeah. They're like outside your trailer, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, it was needed, the psychologist.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, they had the experience of being told that what they were doing was like illegal. So they had like gone and talked about the supplements, the benefits of the supplements in like they're verified supplements, like BCAAs, creatine, stuff like that, verified supplements. So we're talking about the benefits of those supplements on the pack, but she was contesting that once you blend it with chocolate and then you start eating, you can't talk about those benefits. They may not exist. You need separate trials for that sort of stuff. And so they gone to a legal battle and Raph's like, no, it's all good. I'm actually almost a lawyer. And then she's like, oh, really? Well, maybe you should go back and finish law school. So he just got fucking burnt so hard in front of on national TV. And the amount of, the amount of people... Yeah, the amount of people that were messaging us and messaging the podcast and Raph afterwards, it was a big evening for you guys.
You do need a thick skin. That's like my biggest learning from it, because they even put it on YouTube and there's probably nearly 50 comments making fun of the guy I did it with, the size of his neck and how long it is.
Yeah.
All the way to people like, man, clearly these supplements have side effects. Look at the growth in that guy's neck. And like hundreds of people jumping in on this. So you have to have a thick skin, I learned when you go on TV.
There was one where we were just like, yeah, like the number one clip about us was like, oh, our valuation is Kevin O'Leary is
calling your valuation stinky poo-poo
or whatever. You're just like, what? You got to deal with these trolls and comments. But
yeah,
you definitely need thick skin for sure.
Yeah. Cool. So I thought we'd talk as we kind of wrap up, you know, where NeuroGum's kind of heading now. I know you guys mentioned obviously investors and stuff, and it seems like a product that, you know, when it's getting that level of publicity, some of the publications you guys have been in pretty, some of the biggest in the world, you're getting a lot of attention. I'm sure you're getting offers all the time. You're trying to go, okay, well, how fast do we want to grow it? How slow do we want to grow it? What direction do we want to go in? It's like when you get more opportunities and more eyes on you and stuff, it almost becomes harder in some ways. As you're growing faster, it becomes more difficult because you have more choice of what to do. So how do you guys sort of navigate the point you're at now, you know, having, you know, near, I think it's 8,000 retail locations and yeah, just all the attention, Rogan, all that sort of stuff. So how do you navigate that?
You know, even with any of the, if there's ever any acquisition offers or certain valuations or partners that want to come into the business to help expand it, unless they fit the framework of what we as the founders believe in, then we're not going to take them in. And that's kind of been our mantra the whole time. Like, we want to grow this thing in as honest a way as we possibly can based on the way we started it. And we're going to continue to do that. So,
yeah. I think in a lot of ways, like, it's been tempting to try to take in more capital from investors to grow faster. And I've seen a lot of friends and colleagues take in substantial cap, like a lot more than we have, and they've grown a lot faster as a result. But they're burning cash, and I think in a way, like, you know, we're almost 5 years into it from launching, and we've kind of grown it organically and slowly, and obviously we've raised some investor capital that was a strategic fit, like Apollo or other investors that have had entrepreneurial experience, and they bring in this like knowledge of like, okay, this is the next stepping stone, and these are your growing pains. And I guess, like, to answer your question, I guess if there's another right partner or a right culture fit, like, we'll definitely entertain it. But right now, like, we're growing pretty quick and in a steady pace. So I think we're in a pretty comfortable.
We don't want to be the guy that peaks in high school. We want to be going a little bit by little bit.
Yeah. You want to peak in the nursing home. You want to be the big shot.
Yeah.
Like the
one guy that's still alive when he's 90, and then there's this. Yeah, all the women
there's
around him.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. So what would you like to happen next when you're obviously, the gum is the staple and the mints. Is it to get in more stores or obviously keep growing there, or are you guys going to launch new products, or what do you see as the future for Neuro? We're told obviously you guys want to make it, you know, more of a lifestyle brand and stuff. So what is kind of the long-term vision?
We want to replace all supplements into an approachable format. So you should take everything in your medicine cabinet and you could turn it into something that you could take with you whenever and wherever. That would be amazing.
Nice.
Cool.
So you could have, what's that? What's the painkiller? Oxycontin gum.
That'd be oxytocin.
You can just be popping it all day.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, don't make it taste too good.
Yeah.
That's not safe.
Yeah. No, that's awesome, guys. And yeah, I mean, obviously for everyone listening, I think it's a great product to support like training and stuff, and obviously to support the work and stuff. What's the best place that people can sort of find out about you guys and follow you guys and what you do?
Our website is getneuro, neuro.com. You can follow us on Instagram at neurogum. We post a lot of updates there. And that's about it.
Nice.
Catch us on TV, catch us on Rogan. Yeah.
Yeah, nice. And honestly, it's one of the, obviously you can tell there's an artist involved, one of the best, most aesthetic websites I've ever seen on the internet. So if you just want to check out what an awesome website looks like, yeah, you could definitely go check out getneuro.com. But guys, no, thanks for coming on and obviously sharing your stories. And Ryan, thanks for being so open about your injury and kind of how that's helped you. So yeah, guys, look, stay safe. And yeah, we appreciate it.
It was a blast. Thanks, guys. Really.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.